It's funny to me looking back at the stuff we grew up with, and now today they call that isekai, right? And I go, when I was younger,
I was literally just thinking
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right. When I was younger, Kagome just fell down the well, man.
Yeah, the Panacea of Children just went through a wardrobe. Like, what?
Like, Harry Potter's a Shonen Jump character. If you think about it hard enough, there's like an established, there's a tournament arc.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to hear a story?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Loremakers, the show where we showcase the storytellers, the creators, and the world builders. I am your host, Scarlet Song, she, her, your local librarian. And today, let's open the book and explore the backstory of who the heck are you? Hi.
Hello. I go by Cosmo Brightrose. I am a bard at the College of Inspiration, which is a Twitch tabletop RPG channel. We play tabletop games for an audience. Personally, with my own hobbies, I also play D&D, play video games. I am a collector of Warhammer 40,000 models and armies. I paint them. I could probably talk about those. I do come up with backstories and stuff for my armies.
Yay! All right, so Cosmo, what sort of stories do you tell?
Varied ones? Mainly, with the tabletop RPG ones, they're generally action, fantasy, sci-fi, genre-spanning, but usually character-driven stories.
Right.
That have big, big overarching plots.
Sometimes ones that go for like 6+ hours, I say.
I mean,
totally as not one of the cast members. Cough, cough, cough.
No, not at all. But when I'm in the DM or GM's seat, I'm sort of controlling that side of things, you know, the overarching story and keeping everyone together. Sometimes I'm a player, so I'm controlling my character and how they interact with the other characters and the overarching story. We've been doing this over a decade now.
Wow. So I know personally that you haven't been live streaming that entire time because I was with you for the first one, but
yes, the live streaming is a very new thing.
And it's different for you, right?
Yes, yes. It's a lot different. The creating of the story is a bit the same, mostly, but
right.
I try to go for more planning to keep it more consistent, because it's not just, you know, me and my friend sitting around a table winging it by the seat of our pants.
I mean, it can be, but at the same time, the way it's presented.
Yeah, given that I'm trying to present it to an audience, I try and put a bit more polish on it, try and make things more consistent. It's still a lot of improv, just reacting how to the character stuff, but I'm not making up the plot on the seat of my pants, which I've definitely done before.
Do you feel restricted by that then?
No, actually, I think I prefer the structure of it.
All right.
It's not so much restrictive. I think there's a bit more pressure, definitely.
Oh yeah, I can see that, especially if it's a streamed game.
Yeah, yeah, because it's not just me and my friends, it's honestly, anyone on the internet can come and watch this and see it.
I can see that.
Yeah.
So imagine that I am Nuhuman, or Twitchbot, arriving onto the channel. What does this look like? How do you guys on the College of Inspiration and you as a GM, how do you present your work?
So the way we present our games is we use PNG tuber style.
So character sprites at the bottom?
Yeah, so character sprites representing the different characters of the players.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of are arranged on the bottom. They animate when player is talking, so you can tell which voice is coming out of which character.
Right.
Off to the side is the GM one. So they're separate for the characters. The characters are looking at them. They're looking at the characters. You can tell who's the GM, who's the characters. Tell when they're talking. And then in the background of this, we have an art program to put up backgrounds to represent the scenes you're in and put up pictures of the NPCs. So the people watching the stream are like, oh, I can put a face to that NPC sort of thing.
So in terms of putting it out and kind of design-wise, it's quite immersive as a setup for the story itself, because at least from a lot of Twitch D&D content, it's face cam usually, with character sprites potentially on screen with those face cams.
Yes, so we don't have any face cams. The people behind the characters are not seen. It's just
right.
It's just the character, just the world, just you can see. Bit a much more of an immersive thing. We're not against face cams or anything. It's just
right.
This is the style we've gone for. And it helps some players feel more comfortable. They're like, I don't want my face out there on the internet, but they're like, I'll happily play a character.
That's fair. That makes sense. Especially if you're going for something like a 4-hour plus game, you start to get exhausted. I play on the Phoenix Owaki Fey Wild game. I start to lose energy towards the end because I definitely feel sometimes you get face cam face, right? You're aware you're on the internet.
Yeah, you're putting on that smile for everyone.
Yeah, right. So in that case, when you are running games, do you see each other or is it the same for the players as well? Or is there something different behind the scenes compared to what everyone else sees?
Yeah, so for the players involved in the voice chat we're on, we have our cameras turned on so we can see each other's faces mostly. The option is if the player doesn't want to have that on, they don't have to. Purely how they feel about it. Generally, the players like to see, you know, being able to see facial expressions helps a lot when role-playing.
Right, I can see that. Especially if you've got a sprite that isn't changing its expression as much, but it is there.
Which does present that slight problem that if the players have a moment where they're almost interacting non-verbally...
You're calling me out.
I mean, it's not just you. I've seen it with the other players, but sometimes the players will give each other a look, which is meaningful when you can see the players' faces, but on stream, it just... looks like a moment of silence.
Yeah, I can see that. Do you have a moment that you can think of in particular?
I can't think of one in particular at this point, but like I definitely picked up on it. Something that going forward when I'm editing those VODs, when we're recording, make a note of the timing of it, be like, all right, I know there's going to be a weird moment of silence here. Yeah.
Just insert character stares at the other character tearfully.
Yeah, currently with the way... I do the background music, though. If I did try to edit it out, there'd be a jump or a skip in that. So that's a future problem that I have to
navigate.
Figure out. Maybe put background music in post stream.
For you, has this been kind of a tech experience for you as well? It sounds like you've had to scale up.
A lot of new skills
I've
had to learn on the fly almost. I've had some help. I've got a few friends who are into streaming and I've got people I can ask for advice and obviously plenty of YouTube tutorials and whatnot about getting started as a streamer, but yeah.
Oh yeah, especially these days.
Thank you to everyone being locked inside for about 2 years. But yeah, it's something I'd never really done before and then just sort of dove into the deep end of it with the... Well, it wasn't a huge deep end. The first one was meant to be a one-shot. Where it was going to be like, okay, get this done. It'll be fun.
Cough.
Someone else will take the reins for the next one.
Right.
But we had so much fun, me and the players.
Including me.
The characters were great. The audience we had really enjoyed everything. So it just felt right.
We had fan art by the end of that episode, which terrified me a little bit.
Never had fan art of anything that I've been involved in creatively. The closest thing would be, I've commissioned an artist to do some art of something I've made.
Right.
That's it. Like, I've never seen someone of their own, and multiple people as well, just...
Yeah, by this point, yeah.
Well, even the first one, the soiree, the Sanguis soiree.
Oh yeah, there were like two pictures? Three?
I should clarify, the first thing... The College of Inspiration did. The first stream we had was a one-shot called the Sanguis Soiree, which was a murder mystery one-shot, which involved a big fancy party at the Sanguis Manor.
A good classic Agatha Christie style.
Yeah, yeah. There's a bunch of people in this big house.
With too much money.
Yep. Someone gets murdered. Clues need to be found. The murderer needs to be found before things go poorly.
Right.
And it was great fun. That has since spun off because we were like, this is such a fun thing. We want to continue the story of these characters.
Right.
We want that we decided to make it into a long-running campaign.
Right. And this one is Arc Point.
We are calling it Arc Point at the moment because it is based in the city of Arc Point, which was the city nearby to where this manor was,
right,
where these characters live.
Right.
So Arc Point is this city, a coastal town. I have my notes here from the soiree. The only description we got of Arc Point for the soiree was it's a multitude of stone buildings, the streets full of people seeking shelter from the rain.
As noir as you could get.
Yeah. And there is a description of we pass over the city walls as we're narratively moving towards where the action is happening, sort of thing. The only things that were established about Arc Point for that first one shot was just like, it's a city, there are buildings and people, and some walls. That's it.
Right. So what's really interesting about that, because I've been part of pretty much every step aside from stuff that I can't know as a player, because I'm one of the main artists on the series. Seeing that progress, right? You world building on top of that. What was that like going, hey, there was some cobblestones and we go over it, it's raining all the time, to snap cut, you have a map that we spent 6 hours on a stream doing together, essentially, and world building. Like, tell me about your world building. Let's go.
Yeah, no, so when we decided, oh, we're going to make more of this, I'm like, well, the city needs to be a bit more detailed. The theme we're going for is a fantasy, noir, urban crime drama kind of thing.
Right.
So there's going to be a lot of happening in this city, because that's where all the action is.
Right.
So I was like, well, the first thing that needs to be established is this city needs to be fleshed out a lot more, so we can have places to go and things to do and
crime.
You know, where crime can happen for the players to interact with
and investigate if investigations sort of occur.
Yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. Give them streets to wander
and back alleys to interrogate in, that sort of thing.
Exactly. So there were things that I was like, I knew I wanted it to be coastal.
Yes,
because
I'd already written it down as well.
Yeah, I'd already established it was coastal, but also, what noir doesn't have a docks?
Oh, that's a good question. Is there a noir without a docks? Is there one based in a desert?
I mean, there's probably, like, inland noir things. But
Midsummer Murders.
But I wanted docks, because classic.
It's like, we need docks. We need somebody to, like, push, just like, ah, yes, sink them into the river.
They're sleeping with the
fishes.
I'm not great at coming up with like instant.
My first thought was that astral shark that they came out with Spelljammer. I want an astral shark, just casually astral shark in the water. Da-da, da-da, noir sounds. Anyway, you were saying sorry.
So I wanted to be coastal. I knew I wanted it to be sort of major trade hub in a sense, because I wanted it to be multicultural in this world. Because I love fantasy worlds that have, you know, a showcase of different, like, all the cool fantasy races and stuff. Love doing that.
Right.
But also, yeah, for story purposes, having all these different, you know, cultures come together, is it creates story.
Right.
Plus, the party itself was already like four different races.
Sorry, I fully expected that sentence to turn into the party itself was four different stupidly long backstories.
Well, that actually leads into another part of the world building of Arc Point, is that I wanted to tie in the characters' backstories. And I got a nice mix of backstories, actually.
What kind of characters are in Arc Point for those who do not know about it?
So the four main player characters of Arc Point and the Sangwa Soiree are Janice Amberwood, the son of the local lord, human, young, late teens, I think his character is.
Late teens, early adult from memory.
Yeah, yeah. You know, somewhere between 18 to 20 years old. And as a human, you know, and very, yeah. He's, you know, a rich kid, but a bit sheltered, doesn't really, like, he's new to this underworld of the city.
And excited, too, because it's very interesting as a player and as a person who's drawn the art sprites for this character. Janice essentially goes from emo kid to peppy, I want to help puppy dog. They're two different creatures to some degree.
His original vision for the character has definitely shifted a bit.
Yeah.
You know, naturally and organically, which is nice. And
yeah.
Just, his character has moved on. So yeah, there's Janice Amberwood. There is Scoop, who I don't think has a last name at this point.
Scoop's got the scoop.
Yeah. Scoop is a dragonborn, a red dragonborn, who is a private eye. A down on his luck private eye as well. Scoop, he is struggling.
To all the listeners right now, I am nodding along sagely at this information.
But he's very, very enthusiastic.
Mm.
He is committed to his job. He wants to stop crime and put criminals behind bars and all that.
And he plays very smart for playing the full character. Mm. Like, very smart.
Yes. No, it is a wonderful character. Then we have Miss Cotter, your character, Scarlett.
Hi, it's me.
So, with Janice and Scoop, their players didn't give me a huge backstory. Scoop...
Oh, I can feel the call-out.
Scoop has a bit of one. Yep. Janice doesn't really have much of one. It's his sort of story is coming out through the playing of Arkpoint.
Yeah. We did discuss how Janice's backstory is essentially what Arkpoint is.
Yeah, yeah. Like, we're playing his backstory almost, playing through it, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
But the flip side with Miss Cotter and the other character I'll get to, I got very detailed backstories and given characters to put in the world and places that I needed to connect Arkpoint to, and which really helped in the world building, because I'm like, okay, I need to fit these things in, so
right.
Therefore I can make the characters grounded and organically right. fit in this city. So Miss Cotter is, I mean, I'm not sure how much, like, I know more than a lot of other people, so I'm going to try and keep this.
I would
this.
Say the basic version.
I've got, actually, I'll bring up the basic description I have from when I did the first episode intro.
Yes. So, in comparison to the very small amounts of backstory given to, and I say small mainly because mine was at least 3 or 4 months every day DMing Cosmo
great.
With art and concepts, and I got really excited.
We had a few just discussions. We were just like, all right, jump on voice chat. We need to just chat this out so we can figure it out.
Yes. Miss Cotter is a very fleshed out character, I think. I think she's potentially one of the most fleshed out characters I've ever played and I've ever had DM input in playing. Like, I've had characters have story beats and I've had characters that have been like semi-fleshed out, but I think of all characters, Miss Cotter has been the most fleshed out character that I've had ever, pretty much.
That,
and I, anybody who knows me knows I know my characters very well.
That brings up a point. I'll circle back to that in a second.
Sorry, yeah. Continue.
But to finish describing, so Miss Cotter is on the outside from what most people see, she's a maid. She works for a rich family as a maid. But she seems to have skills. And knows things from, a past life. She's a dark elf character. Something to say about Arkpoint. So dark elves in this world aren't like, ooh, always evil and underground and the classic drow. They're just a different.
Yeah.
They're just as common as.
They're just people.
Yeah, they're just as common and stuff. You know, they're just dark skinned elves. Mm. But yes, she's a dark elf. Maid who, is surprisingly good in a fight and seems to know things about the criminal underworld. I don't know how much more to say about that, but...
I will add, as a player, has a surprising tolerance for alcohol.
Surprising tolerance for alcohol and seems to have, some emotional baggage, some serious things from her past that weigh on her mind heavily. Which has been hinted at.
Yeah, very interesting, honestly, exploring Miss Cotter character-wise, in contrast to the last character, who has somehow been connected into accidental backstory, moi.
Yeah. Oh, no, this was a perfect thing. So the final character we have in Arc Point is simply known as the Accountant.
Steps all around.
He makes sure that the books are balanced for the Atello family, who are the most powerful crime family, you know, organized mob in Arc Point, run by Mr. Atello, you know, known as the Don. Very powerful stuff there. And he is a big, very big, broad, muscular, very strong half-orc.
I may have been swooning during the character art phase. I fully admit this.
A very well-dressed half-orc. Always wears a nice suit. His hair is kept immaculate. He speaks with purpose. He is a man of action, but not one to rush into problems.
Yeah.
He solves problems, though. So we have this party of a young kid who has ties to the lord of the city, very tied to the political side of things and being on the right side of the law, because he basically is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a private eye, almost vigilante character who's like, I want to stop crime from happening, but I don't have any luck joining the official channel of doing that, so I'm going to do it my own way. We have this character who is tied to some rich people who seems to have knowledge of these underground things, but is also trying to avoid it. And then we have a character who is literally working for the mob.
Yeah.
And how these four people have come together to work, like, it was fine for a one-shot murder mystery because, oh, they just so happened to be in this one area working together to solve the murder because, like, any one of them could have been accused of it, or they all had their own reasons for solving the murder.
Mm-hmm,
they worked together. And then tying them back together later on, this overarching multi-session campaign has been an interesting thing.
Yes, we did spend an entire episode just meeting.
Yes, getting back together, the first episode, that was pretty fun.
Put into perspective just the disparate elements of how separated these characters are. And it's very interesting that you combine them together.
Yeah, we had to go individually and establish what their role in the city is and what they do and what the character is like. Because something I wanted to do for that first episode is make it easy to, if you just jumped into the first episode without watching the one-shot
right.
technically prologue, you would be able to pick it up pretty quickly. So I wanted to establish each of the characters pretty well and then get them together, so it took a little bit of work. The thing I wanted to circle back on earlier was I was given a lot of the starting backstories for the soiree individually. There was a little bit of discussion between everyone, but everyone sort of had an idea of what they wanted their characters to be. So, and it was just a really nice coincidence that some of them just meshed quite well. So Miss Cotta, the maid working at the fancy family at this manor, to want to avoid anything to do with the mob.
Gosh, I wonder why.
You know, the accountant's player was like, hey, I want to play a mob enforcer. And I'm like, oh, yes, please. Yes.
I want to play a mob enforcer. I still remember vividly the moment you mentioned what the symbol on the side of the carriage during the soiree episode that the accountant arrived in, and the look on my face as I was freaking out silently, and the look on the player for the accountant's face going, what is going on? What don't I know? I need to know more now. And you just having this smug ass grin.
Yeah, that was a good feeling.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. It's just like, ah, yes, my players. You have been manipulated from the start. Now, going back to it very quickly, we've talked about this campaign. Would you consider Arc Point your main baby as a Dungeons & Dragons livestream, or would you consider it one of your babies?
At this point, I think it's my main focus.
Right.
I've definitely sunk a lot of time and effort into building Arc Point, especially alongside put from my players and whatnot, and it is something that I'm really keen on making more progress on going forward.
Right.
I have so many ideas bouncing around in my head, and I'm just like, I want to, ooh, I can't wait.
Roll a d20.
Yeah, can't wait to to go through with this. The other creative endeavors I have are definitely just more sort of personal things.
Right.
For example, coming up with the backstories for my Warhammer armies sort of thing. It's just like, it's literally just for me. I can tell other people, but it doesn't really play into any of the games, like, because those aren't narrative games, they're battle games.
Right. So in that case, just to go on to the Warhammer thing, with your Warhammer games, do you find there to be influence from the way that you've written your Warhammer backstories for your armies? I want to say armies.
It's all right. Armies is accurate. Warhammer is like, I don't play competitively. I build what I find fun and play with what I find fun. So I tend to be like, I like the look of those models. Right. I'm going to buy those models.
Right.
And build them and paint them and add them to my army.
Right.
And then through that, I have been like, okay, to make sense of these models being together, can I come up with a story thing for that?
Right.
For example, my Chaos army is, I really like the look of the demon engines and the possessed space marines. So these are machines and people that have demon flesh and tentacles and whatnot.
Ooh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, and so I really like the models, so I collect them and paint them. And then one of the great cults of the Thousand Sun Sorcerer group,
which is a, for people who have no idea what Warhammer is.
Okay.
It's me. I don't know what Warhammer is. Oh, I do a little bit, but not nearly enough.
Yeah, yeah. This is one of those things, it's like every time I start discussing Warhammer with someone, it's one of those things where like, oh, so it's connected to this, and they're like, what's that? And then this can go on a lot of tangents just to understand. There's a very lot of deep history with Warhammer, but I'll try to keep it brief.
Right.
Chaos armies. Chaos is evil. They're tied to the warp, which is like another dimension full of demons and magic and manipulated by human emotions. I'm a fan of the Thousand Suns. They are a Chaos Space Marine army. So Space Marines are genetically engineered super soldiers created by the Emperor of Man to defend humanity. A bunch of them turned to Chaos, and now they're evil. The Thousand Suns, in particular, are adept at magic.
Right.
They have, within their big legion, they have different people following the different cults, which are just like different things. So there's the cult of magic, the cult of time, the cult of mutation.
Right.
So the cult of mutation was the one that I looked at, and I'm like, that feels fitting for these models I've collected.
Right.
So I'll tie myself into that and base it on things like that. Reading through the different rule books and story books of that, I've come up with, okay, the organization for my army, there'd be sorcerers in charge. They have a sacred number of 9, so I'll have 9 of them.
So you use bits and bobs of the established lore.
Yes.
And then you make it your own.
Yeah, yeah. I like Warhammer in particular. I do like having it tied in so it fits in the lore, while also having my own twist on it. Being able to give my army my own paint job and name the characters myself and stuff like that. Like, make it personal to me, while also making it so it gels well with the rest of the world.
That makes sense. So, going back to Arcpoint, for example, you've mentioned that you work within the world of Warhammer to make it your own.
Yeah.
So you kind of work around what's there to create your own thing. With Arcpoint, it sounds like that is 100% homebrew organic for you.
Yes, it is. It is. Which is not a new thing to me. A lot of my very first D&D campaigns were my attempts at coming up with my own story. I started playing D&D in 4th edition.
Right.
Back in like 2009, 2010.
Before the 5th edition population wave.
Yeah, until everyone got into 5th edition sort of thing. And it was, I just missed out on 3.5.
Right.
Once 5th edition came out, I transitioned. It was a much better system for me personally. I like that it focused more on roleplay. But starting in 4th edition, there, from what I remember at least, there was a lot of rule books, but not a lot of campaign or story books. So,
interesting.
Yeah, a lot of it was you had to come up with your own stuff. At least that's what I remember.
I see, that makes sense. I mean, I have no experience with 4th edition, and I read bits and bobs of 3.5, and I went, that's a bit too much math for me.
Fair.
Right? As someone who is everyone will tell you, I am a very heavy role player, as you are aware of.
Mm, I know.
What? You going at me?
Oh my, like, I'm not calling you out at all.
So this is homebrew for you.
Yes.
And we have discussed how much of an influence your characters have had.
Yes.
In you creating this world, because there are multiple avenues that you want to explore with these characters.
Mm.
Which comes first for you, world building or character building? Which is more important for you in the terms of the way that your world works, at least within ArcPoint?
I feel it's a good mix of both.
Okay. Do you treat ArcPoint as a character? The city itself?
No, I definitely don't think the city itself is a character. Like, in my head, it's a place filled with characters.
Right.
To put it in a smaller idea, it's the dungeon that the characters are exploring.
Right.
And there are things that are going to happen in that dungeon. There may be people they're going to meet in that dungeon. But it is a way to facilitate them experiencing these encounters.
Right.
Yeah. I feel it. There needs to be back and forth, personally, for my, like, homebrew.
Right. So characters influencing the world and then you influencing them, kind of thing?
Yeah. So I'd say, like, the way that it sort of flowed with ArcPoint and the soiree was, like, well, like, literally the thing that inspired the soiree in the first place was you, Scarlett. You did some art.
That's right.
Of a dark elf maid.
I want to be a battle mage. I think that was the entire joke. And then I ended up playing a paladin character, which is a half caster, half melee fighter. So, you know, it happened. I was a battle mage, technically. Just a holy one.
Technically. Yeah. It was like, you did this art, and I'm not sure which one of us came up with the idea, but someone mentioned the idea of, like, a murder mystery one-shot.
I think it was you.
I think it was. I was just like, oh. You were like, I want to play this character. I was like, they would fit really well in a murder mystery style thing, because they're a maid.
That is exactly what happened.
Like, you know what? I'm thinking of murder mystery ideas. I'll start planning this. I'll get some other players together.
We'll come up with characters.
So I had a vague idea of what I wanted the murder mystery to be.
Right.
I know I needed, you know, you needed to get information from characters. You also needed to have people to accuse, things like that. In that. So I was like, all right, I'll come up with some characters, but to fill this out, who can I have, who can I tie the players to? So I talked with the players about what their attempt at what they wanted their backgrounds to be and whatnot. So, for example, Giannis's character was like, hey, I want to be the son of a lord. I'm like, sweet, I can put in a lord and lady at this party. I'll come up with that sort of thing.
And it's been very interesting to see that in the later series that came out where Giannis has to go home. In many adventuring stories, there isn't a home base, or the players have to establish their own.
Mm.
But the fact that all of these players, to some degree, have a home base that they have to return to for one reason or another makes them human, or humanizes them is the best way I can describe it, because you do not just F humans in the party.
So that sort of helped establish the soiree. And then through playing the soiree, there was a bit of just world building come out of that. Some things were established about the world at large.
Yep.
Which inspired some of the other players. Like, when we finished and we were like, oh, we definitely feel like continuing it, the other players took some elements from that world building and, oh, I'm going to incorporate that into my backstory to flesh out my character more. And then they built on their backstory a bit more. And then I took some of the stuff they'd built on their backstory and was like, ooh, I can incorporate that into the world at large. And this cyclical thing happened where we were bouncing things back and forth and just it expanded from there.
And it seems like it's expanded a lot, because I do remember that during the map making stream, and for those who are listening, there will be a link to images and such either in the Loremakers Discord or in the description box below. There was a whole bunch of things established just while we were drawing up what your city was.
Right. I had a really basic layout of the city of just I wanted various districts and some geography. But it was a very basic couple of lines of pencil on a piece of paper.
He lies. It was more than that. But yes, continue.
I mean, it's quite a few lines.
But, there you go.
It wasn't a super detailed, nice map that we have now.
Right.
I commissioned you to make a nice map. And do art streams, and you were like, how about you hang out on the stream? We can talk about...
Because I'm going to need your input.
Yeah.
Basically 100% of the time.
Yeah, yeah. Feedback as we go, and bouncing off each other, we came up with all these ideas for building up some things on ArcPoint.
My favorite part was coming up with the lighthouse because we needed the accountant to have somewhere to brood at.
Exactly, yeah. Which is like, and it, like, on top of that, it made sense for the city to have lighthouse because it's a coastal city and those existed for a reason.
And it's got trade and ships and those docks that you wanted.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and like a lot of the characters established in ArcPoint, a lot of the NPCs have been, you know, tied to one or more of the characters to help facilitate them, you know, knowing people in the city and having ways, you know, the story hooks to tie them into things.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it gives it stakes.
Yeah.
Not just buffer stakes, but stakes.
That's a
joke for those who saw episode 3.
I think it was number 3.
It was the stake out episode.
Yeah.
At least. Anyway.
It is an interesting thing that this city doesn't... It does happen in tabletop RPGs, but I feel it's a bit rarer in the fantasy type or sci-fi ones where... Like,
right.
Death for a character, or, like, an NPC even,
yes.
is actually quite impactful, because
we
really have established these relationships, and there's real weight to someone's presence in the city.
It's not a cave full of goblins that you have to take out in order to do insert thing here.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a village being, like, attacked by orcs, you know, and a bunch of them are slaughtered, and then you have to go slaughter the orcs back sort of thing. It's not like that's not established. This is a proper city, like almost late 1800s, early 1900s in terms of like...
Technology and...
Not technology, well, almost technology, well, but like that sort of style of city.
Technology.
Yeah.
Like an artificer makes sense kind of thing.
We have artificers. Well, like, that's the funny thing, is like I'd say like the architecture is something along those lines. You know, people are using carriages to get around. But we have something called spell stones, which are an equivalent of cell phones.
Which were specifically a joke made.
Mm. Yeah, no, during the soiree, the accountant wanted to be like, do I have any way to contact like my criminal network? So I can get some information, like a sending stone or something. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know what? Sure. We'll say you have that because it makes sense for your character. I'll, you know, get that information. It'll be good. And Janice's player, if I remember correctly, was like, he's making a stone call.
And we all lost it. We all lost it completely.
And from that point, I was like, all right, there's need to be a thing. It was great. So, like, that's another thing that leads into world building is just some offhand comments can just, you know what, we'll establish that as canon and build into it.
And that's something that you find probably happens more organically because it's collaborative storytelling at its core, right?
Yeah Tabletop role playing is definitely something that builds on the whole group coming together and making the story happen in the world real, because you can have groups that don't fully mesh or don't interact with those sort of things. They'll just go from point A to point B doing their objective, don't really care about the story, which, you know, that's how some people play, that's how they enjoy it.
Right.
I've DM'd and played in groups like that. Didn't hate it, but definitely I've enjoyed the roleplay heavy, the story building kind of groups and games better.
Right. The stakes, the
emotional weight.
Yes, there's a lot of that, isn't there? Are you ready to hear some questions from the public at large?
Yeah, hit me.
Whack. So the way it works is we have some questions that were submitted to the Twitter. If people want to submit questions to the Twitter, they can go to @makerslaw, because lawmakers was taken by an account that was not us. Rude. Or you can go check out the Discord, which will be linked in the show notes. All right, question one comes from a really cool person with a very nice hat called Eldritch Flapcap. To Cosmo.
That's me.
How does the city of ArcPoint fit into the wider geopolitical sphere? Is it independent, an autonomous state, or perhaps part of a larger country?
That's a good question.
The answer can be,
That's pretty close to what the answer is. Because it was one of those things.
Yeah.
When making ArcPoint,
right.
Part of my world-building brain is like, all right, how does this fit into the world at large?
Yes, because you mentioned earlier that you had places that you had to fit in.
Yeah.
I remember.
Sort of. There are other places outside of ArcPoint in this world.
Right.
I just at one point realized the campaign is going to be set in ArcPoint. It's not going to involve much outside of ArcPoint, apart from a couple of things.
Right.
If I try and design a whole world that we're never going to see, I'm never going to get started.
I understand that completely. I've been there.
Mm. I have decided, yeah, ArcPoint, given that it has its own lord,
mm.
it sort of is an independent city-state.
Right.
So it's the city and a bit of the land around it, mm. like a good chunk of land around it consists of farmland, and there's some mining going on in the mountains. And
right, and that all feeds into
it. Yeah, it all feeds into it, but I haven't decided exactly where the big highway goes to. It just leads out of ArcPoint to another city.
It just goes.
Yeah.
The highway of possibility.
Yeah, there are other places outside of ArcPoint that will be mentioned, but overall, I haven't designed the whole world. This isn't a Exandria.
No. God knows how long that took Matt Mercer.
Yeah.
I mean, what, 2 campaign books now?
Mm. Yeah, ArcPoint is its own sort of independent city-state, but beyond mm. what is, lies beyond its borders is vague at this point.
Right. An additional point to that is, how did the city end up becoming as large and diverse as it is? Asks Eldritch Flatcap again. We did talk about this. You said you wanted it.
Yeah.
Diverse. You said you wanted it multicultural.
Yes. When designing the city as the maker, like from an outside game perspective,
right.
I want diversity and whatnot. In lore, it's because it's a major trade hub. It sees a lot of traffic. A lot of people pass through. It attracts a lot of people.
Bonus question. Mm. It attracts a lot of people. What's the main tourist food?
Ooh.
New York has pizza. Mm. Australia debatably has meat pie.
Debatably.
But what is ArcPoint's? Is it the chocolatier's place with the centaur running it? Or
no, I think he's a specialist. Because, like, if it's a main tourist food, it would be something that is sold almost on every street corner, right?
Right. So, what's the food?
Mm. That's something I hadn't considered. I feel...
I mean, whatever you want.
Yeah. Given where ArcPoint is situated, it's got a lot of right. farmland, but also it's on the coast. So I feel it would be a combination of something seafood combined with something you can grow. Am I thinking... Mm.
There's a specific meal. A surf and turf.
Surf and turf? Yeah. If it was livestock, something I just considered was maybe a lot of farmland is rice.
Ooh, I like that. I mm. like that. Those jelly donuts.
Jelly filled is my favorite.
The jelly filled is my favorite. Rice donuts. The rice flour donuts are a thing.
Mm.
You have the donuts made out of mochi rice flour. It's a lot of the Japanese style, like ponderingu toka. It's really fun. It's a whole bunch of like individual bubbles, and then you can pull it out in sections. Ooh. It's very satisfying and fun to play with.
That does sound pretty good.
Oh, and you could say it's pondering arc point style, and it's shaped like the pointy spit on the arc point star thing.
Mm.
Don't mind me.
Yeah.
I'm just picturing just a whole bunch of seaside tourist merchants kind of hawk to someone like Scoop or Janice being like, get your tourist maps here. Get your arc point rings. Commemorative tasty edible arc point rings. One dot for every section of the city. Every district. Try yours.
Each little section of it is like slightly differently flavored.
Ooh, yeah, no. The verdant area is matcha. Or the equivalent of matcha. All right. So the other question that we had is from one of the players. Don't worry, they didn't ask for spoilers. This one comes from Juniper French. What was the moment you realized you wanted to run ArcPoint as a campaign as opposed to the one shot that you ran it as to begin with?
It was during the one shot, I think. Or
mm-hmm.
it was less that I wanted to run ArcPoint as a campaign, more I wanted to continue a campaign with the characters from the one shot and the players from the one shot specifically.
It's good because that's all on back.
It was really good chemistry.
Yeah.
It was really good. It just was a really well-rounded party that had some really good chemistry and some really interesting stories to explore. And I wanted to explore those and see where we could take them as a group.
And I agree with you on the chemistry. There is a main ship for those who are listening in this. I won't go into details.
I'm in it.
I don't ship it.
Not only does our GM ship it, our GM announced they don't ship it several times during the one shot.
Guilty.
Anyway, but I was very surprised at just how well we all balanced each other out.
Mm.
And even now in that party, it's an odd mix of practical tragedy, comedic, and very serious. We've got all bases covered and everyone has the capability to almost be one of those aspects at the same time. Like, there's different types of healing. I may be playing the healer, but there is different kinds of healing at play at the table multiple times, especially from the people getting injured. Stop getting hurt!
Yeah, it's a group of really good players, like, well-rounded. You all have...
Are you going to make me cry?
Maybe.
Oh, no!
I was just going to say, you all have respect for each other at the table in the sense of you know when to step in, or you know, you'll step back from the spotlight when it's someone else's spotlight. You're not ever fighting for control and you play off each other really well.
On that note, we give the spotlight too, and we take it when we think it's tonally accurate.
Oh.
I'm still in shock that the split party scene happened organically.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I have this horrible feeling that someone just spent too much money. Was just me playing along, but we suddenly the scene was on Miss Cotter and the accountant, and whew. So, for some context, I think it was episode 2.
I think so.
Where the characters in the party had split up, and the shocking thing happened where it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And people gave the mic, essentially, to each other. And that was amazing. And we were all looking at each other via the face cam going, is this happening? I think this is happening. Hey, Cosmo, is this happening? And Cosmo, and you were like,
yeah,
I'm rolling with it.
I mean, it's a testament to the group that the amount of times where I've just let things play out. And as a GM, I'm just like, they've got this. The scene is playing without me. I'll put it in. If they ask me directly to step in, I will. But the chemistry and it was a combination of the players and the characters that I just wanted to explore more of them. I wanted to keep that going. And then following the one shot, I was inundated with even more character backstory and stuff, which just made me even more excited to continue.
It's me. I'm the problem. It's okay. I have acknowledged this. I have a full notebook of fan art, guys, that no one gets to see until the end of the series. No one but two people.
One of them.
Yeah. Of course you're one of them. All right. And the last question that was asked to our Twitter by Oho. A strange YouTuber appears to have requested this one. God, I wonder who.
Yes, Scarlet?
Shh. From Scarlet Song. That name sounds so familiar. To Cosmo, if Arc Point was a cocktail,
ooh,
what cocktail would your campaign be? So, for those without context, Cosmo is an excellent bartender.
Thank you.
And bartender.
It's a tricky question. I mean, there's the first thing that popped in my head was a dark and stormy. But thinking of breaking down the campaign itself as a cocktail is interesting. Because trying to think of all the different ingredients that make the campaign what it is, there's elements of, I guess, bitters would be in it. Because there is some of that bitterness in with the characters.
Metaphor. Love it.
I honestly
feel like it'd be a spicy Long Island, honestly.
Well, like, part of me was thinking a Long Island iced tea, not in the sense that the Long Island iced tea
is going to f*** you up.
That's very true. And also, it's just so many different ingredients at once.
Mm-hmm.
It would be something that has a long evolution. As you are tasting it, it goes from bitter to, like, there's a hint of sweet, but it's also a little tart and, like...
There's smoke on top.
A bit smoky. I don't know if I could put it down to a
single cocktail.
A single cocktail.
You know what this means, right?
I'm going to have to invent one.
You're going to have to invent one. Any hoozles, are you ready to move on to some D20 questions?
I'd love to.
On this channel, we do what's called D20 questions. D20 questions. I have a list of 20 questions, and our guest will roll upon this table with a 20-sided die. This comes from the fact that I am a massive Dungeons & Dragons fan, and we have a dragonborn we're interviewing today. So, Cosmo, what's your first number?
Oop.
Roll it.
All right, so my first roll is a 16.
16. Da-da-da-da-da-da. What is your dream setting to create in?
Oh, that's an interesting one. I like a lot of genres. I think it would be like a weird blend of settings.
Okay. This is sounding like to be a thing for you, but continue.
Well, I love fantasy and magic and stuff, but I love sci-fi as well.
I mean, Spelljam is out. But
right, like I definitely want to give that a read.
Play in my game. Sorry, continue.
Like I want to say I would probably lean more towards sci-fi, but I've never really had a chance to do that because D&D is primarily fantasy. I've done some action style, like modern action stuff.
Feng Shui, right?
Feng Shui, yeah, the role-playing game, right. Feng Shui, not the rearrange furniture to good vibes feng shui, but
I mean you can do both, but continue.
You can do both, but yeah, like thinking about it would be like something that would be really fun. I would love to play, if honestly the rules weren't so complicated, was Shadowrun.
I saw that,
does bend that,
right?
Yeah, Shadowrun has this cool like, oh, you can be an orc druid or you can literally hack into the internet.
There is no in between.
Yeah, there's like, oh, this weird blend of magic and tech going on, and that would be really fun. But I took a look at the basic rules, and it's like, oh, this is a one page just hacking.
Oh, okay. So there's a lot less freedom in it, is what you're saying.
From what I remember.
Or there's a rule for basically everything.
It's very detailed and granular and very complicated. Ah. Yeah.
Okay, I can see that.
It's a lot less loose. And, like, that tracks with the things I'm into, like Warhammer 40,000, for example. Yep. It is a mix of sci-fi and fantasy. Yes, you can have giant mechs with lasers, but there's also a guy who is carrying a sword and casting spells.
Right.
Yes, okay, he's wearing power armor, but he's literally a space wizard.
Right. Space wizard with grand tech.
Yeah, like, I like that.
That makes you happy.
That is the setting I enjoy, that combination blend of fantasy and sci-fi together.
Would you say that, aside from 40K, that any sort of media from your past was kind of a big influence on that, too?
I mean, Star Wars is definitely a big one like that. Generic sci-fi movies and stuff is a big part. Like, I've enjoyed both sci-fi and fantasy movies.
So the amalgamation of the both is exactly what you need.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. I'd say that. A setting that I can combine those in. And honestly, I think the perfect one would, I don't know if it would work quite well, but somehow combine that with a modern slash contemporary. A story I've always wanted to tell is a modern city being invaded by aliens or something.
Really?
Like, as a tabletop RPG, like, I thought that would be a really interesting thing.
Go on, I am curious. Tell me more.
I mean, it's just the idea of like having the party be a group of people just in a city, and then aliens invade and they have to work together to survive and like, you know, fend off the alien invasion or whatever.
So in that case, the aliens are the aggressors and it's not kind of introducing technology sort of thing?
In that setting, in that particular story, it would be. Another thought I've had is have that exact scenario, but they invade a fantasy city as well. So it's aliens with like ray guns fighting a wizard shooting a fireball.
Ooh, okay, I can see that.
But you have, you know, the party could easily pick up parts from the aliens and do stuff. I don't know, it's, I just like all those things.
So you want to be able to, I want to mush all of the things that I really love into the one thing. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. You ready to roll your next one?
Yes. That's a 19. High roller.
19. All right, shout out your favorite media or inspirations.
Oh, I mean, I guess kind of did that.
You did, but what are you into right now? What is your most watched YouTube channel? That sort of thing.
Well, my most watched YouTube channel at the moment isn't really.
That's fine.
I'm a big fan of Dimension 20 and The Adventure Zone, and I'm currently making my way through Critical Role. So I know those are really popular things. You know, people probably have heard of those. But yes, The Adventure Zone is a D&D podcast played by the McElroy family, which was my first one that I got into in terms of actual play games. And I love it. I've also really enjoyed Dimension 20. And yeah, I've finally making my way through Critical Role. There's a lot to go through there. But it's been a lot of fun. Really enjoy it. Matt Mercer is a great DM and the cast are great players for that. That's how I feel about all three of those, honestly. Bunch of great DMs and players.
Tonally, which of those do you think would reflect your style of GMing most?
Probably Dimension 20. In terms of style, I'm not the same kind of GM as Brennan Lee Mulligan is in terms of the way he creates worlds and acts. It's like, I don't have that. At least not yet.
That's the right attitude.
But the style of his thing is it is a good blend of serious and kind of comedic. I think I've heard that it's
right.
The way he runs these things is he is fine with silly ideas, but as long as they're taken seriously in universe sort of thing.
Right.
And that makes sense to me. That's a good way of having comedic things organically fit into it. I would say that would be me personally.
Right.
But as a tabletop RPG, it is a thing that the tone of the group itself sort of influences that. And I feel Arc Point, for example, is probably, you know, closer to something like Critical Role. It's a bit more serious. There is elements of humor, but it is a lot more grounded, a lot more serious.
I'm sorry, I'm still imagining the buffer stakes.
Yeah, like there are hilarious things that happen, which, you know, that happens in.
Guys, please, if you haven't, just check out Arc Point. It's so emotionally dumb and then emotional. I am in genuine shock every time.
It is.
Just how wildly disparate the elements are.
You will have a lot of feelings in a variety of ways. It's great.
Sometimes at the same time.
Yeah. So we stream on Twitch, but we do upload the VODs to YouTube. So they're all on YouTube. The College Inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Links will be in the show notes.
Yay. So definitely shout out those actual plays that I enjoy. Other media is definitely the Warhammer games. I really enjoy playing both Warhammer Fantasy and Warhammer 40,000 games. And I mean, I really like superhero movies as well. I've never, I'm not sure how much they would influence me, but like, I love that genre.
Shout out what you like, man.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite?
Superhero?
Yeah.
Or just like movie in general?
Who's your favorite superhero?
Probably Spider-Man.
Nice. Good choice, good choice, good choice.
Yeah, classic.
Mm-hmm.
Can't go wrong.
Mm-hmm. I think about it, and I don't know if I have a favorite superhero, because I lean more towards the indie comic genre, so Lady Mechanica would probably be my favorite superhero if we're not doing Marvel vs. DC.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I watch Marvel movies. I don't really read Marvel comics.
Right.
Comics I have read. I really enjoyed, I'm not sure if it's still going, the Fables series.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
back
yeah.
When I was like a teenager.
I remember those.
So that was, it was the idea of, oh, what if the characters from the fairy tales we knew as a kid were real people and they existed in the real world sort of thing.
Where their problems were in fact actually real.
Yeah. That was an interesting series. I really enjoyed that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I read a lot of web comics as well.
Yes, me too. We both mutually have read Ava's Demon. And
Ava's Demon is great, yeah.
Ava's Demon's beautiful. Just, color palettes. All right, we have time for exactly one more.
Okay.
So can I have a D20 question from you?
A 3.
Ask your interviewer a question. Damn it.
Oh, no.
Clearly, I put that in when I was tired.
I'm going to cheat. I'm bad at interviewing. So my question is whatever number 11 is.
Ooh, sneaky, sneaky. Do you cringe at your old work or do you choose to be inspired by it?
Ooh. Well, I guess that's my question to you, but I'll happily answer once.
You first.
You're done.
You okay. First, you first.
No, not really. Thinking back on old work, I wouldn't say any of it I feel is cringe. there are things where I'm like, oh, that was naive of me, or like,
yeah,
you know, problematic in a sense, because, you know, I didn't know the world better and the way that sort of thing. But like,
right.
I definitely see things I could improve on, but I'd right. never go, ugh, cringe.
You like, don't reject that part.
And I don't think you should.
Yeah, no, I agree with that very much.
I'm a believer of, like, it is good to learn from your past and
right.
look back at things where you're like, that was not good.
Right.
But you shouldn't be like, I don't know, cringe is a weird word for that.
You shouldn't be roasting.
Yeah, you shouldn't be down on yourself for not
right.
knowing better.
Because you didn't. And by the act of doing, you learned, right?
Yeah. I think that's a thing I've seen at some point, is cringing at your past is just proof that you've improved as a person.
Yes, no, I agree. I do not. Actually, no, I mix it up. Because I've been creating a very long time. From the wee bubbed stages. I found folders when I moved back to Australia of works that I decided to save. And I have some amazing ideas from teenage me. And I also have some ones that explain a lot of things now. And I go, oh, this explains things. Then I have ones where it's a cat maid girl who works in a cosplay cafe and is found by the cat she saved when she was younger. And she was told by her mom that that cat went to the cat kingdom. And it turns out that that cat wanted to say thank you. Do you have a copy of that comic? Because I found it.
No, but you just reminded me of something. I guess one of my first things I remember creating in high school.
Yeah.
So I got stuck sitting at the computers a lot in high school because my mother was a teacher at the high school, so I had to wait for her to finish things before we could go home.
Right.
And school computers being what they were, you couldn't really play games on them. And something I did was I was writing a story.
Details.
It was about cats and dogs
nice.
Being actually hyper-intelligent.
Nice.
Like, I think I was influenced by literally the movie Cats and Dogs.
Cats and Dogs is a solid film. Anyone who looks otherwise, it has not met like, such a dramatic cat being a villain ever.
Yeah, it took in the early high school ages, early teens for me,
right.
this story was. I don't remember much about it, but I remember, like, I'd never written something like that before, and it was just the story about, like, oh, I'm a person, I own pets, and then some dramatic event happens, and the cats and dogs save me, and then we have to go on this adventure.
That's so much fun, though!
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, yeah, no, you just...
Unlocked core memory.
Yeah, a long, long buried memory that I was like, oh yeah, that existed. Mm. That was something. It was highly influenced by like the novels I was reading at that time as well, which was a lot of those
right.
fantasy things, like a lot of Matthew Riley and Anthony Horowitz. Roald Dahl was right. a big influence in my younger childhood.
Yeah.
But like, you know, kids going on fantastic adventures, being spies
yeah.
or wizards, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
It's really interesting to me looking back at the stuff that we grew up with, because we're quite close in age, but it's funny to me looking back at the stuff we grew up with, and now today they call that isekai, right? And I go, when I was younger...
I was literally just thinking
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right? When I was younger, Kagome just fell down the well, man.
Yeah, they... The Panacea of children just went through a wardrobe. Like, what?
Like, Harry Potter's a Shonen Jump character. If you think about it hard enough, there's like an established... There's a tournament arc.
Yeah.
And just all of these things that now have names. And I go, ah, the people who grew up with the stuff that I grew up with are creating. And I am getting to read their works, which is amazing. And I love it. And that's half the reason this show exists. And hopefully one day I'll be able to interview those people. I'm looking at the person, I really want to interview the person who wrote The Chilling Effect, because my God, the author whose name is eluding me right now definitely played Mass Effect and definitely wanted to date Garrus. It's so strong. And I am, yes, I am here for it. You do that. You bring in your ancient Atlantean technology. You give all of that and you have fun with it. Damn it. Because when you create and when you world build, you're building yeah. not... You're building worlds. And they can be for you, is the other thing that makes me really happy.
I feel you should build the worlds for you. And if other people happen to like them, then even better.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. And make sure it's for you first as well.
If you're not going to enjoy your work, then... why create it?
100%. I also think that let yourself enjoy wish fulfillment. The reason we have so many wish fulfillment anime out at the moment is because people actually do enjoy consuming that media. Shock.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much, Cosmo, for joining today for the very first episode. Do you have anywhere we can find you? Anything that you want to announce? Anything of those sort of things?
You can find me at the College of Inspiration social media. I don't have anything personal, so Twitch/the College of Inspiration, YouTube, College of Inspiration. Twitter is at the College of Inspo.
Because inspiration's too long.
Yeah. So the College of Inspo. So that's where you can find all the Arc Point stuff.
And thank you so much for coming on to the podcast. I hope you had fun.
Thank you for having me, Scarlett.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun.
Huzzah! Success, guys. We fooled them.
This is just an excuse for us to talk about our world building.
Shh. That's exactly the reason this podcast exists. But no one must ever know.
Thank you so much for tuning in to our very first episode of Loremakers. Want to keep up with the podcast? Follow the Twitter at MakersLore or join the Discord where you can find news, future guest announcements, and get your questions featured on our next session. If you enjoyed the show, consider rating and leaving a review on your preferred podcast platform. Or you can tweet us cute gifs of animals. I'll understand. It'll be a secret message for you and me. Lots of love your way, my friends. See you around our campfire.